Now, shame, I don't really feel that I'm going to spend the whole time talking about it, because I want you to put your head in that book. Because every man in this room, if he's not in the moment being attacked in some area of shame, big or little, or his wife at home, every man, woman and child comes under the pressure of shame. Most of us don't understand what it is. I didn't have a clue about it 2.5 years ago. God's taken me on a journey in this. I know what I'm talking about. I'll do it as quickly as I can so that you get an idea. Because when we have our church service tonight, I really want you guys to have a think about this area of shame. I'll give you quickly my little shame story. My shame story was sexual interference by a male in my life up until I probably escaped by going to Mount Isa when I was 13. But when I was 15, my mother was dead on the floor, and I ran in and found her dead. Some of you blokes know this story. And that smashed my heart up. And then when I was 23 or 4, I have three sisters. My youngest sister was 17 and she collapsed and died. And the grief that I was still suffering, I could not walk into the church without two blokes almost dragging me in. And I couldn't understand why I was such a gibbering idiot with that pain of that grief. Now, every time I've told that story in my life, people feel sorry for me. People think, poor Ian, poor Ian, poor Ian. And it was comfortable to always tell that story wherever I go, and it got me to a place where it actually makes you feel like, well, people feel sorry for me. But after I took on what God showed me about shame, he said, that's a cover-up. He said, you're going for that comfort when in fact the moment of your shame is your sexual interference. Now, what I had to put up with there was I had this bloke, I had to watch him play the piano out the front of church, and I had the poor pastor had to try, and he was given altar calls, and I'm 17 by this, and I'm watching him and I'm saying, no way am I going out the front to give my life to the Lord if I'm going to end up like you. You are a mongrel. I was a homosexual hater, basher, anything you wanted to know. Inside me was this hatred and bitterness and resentment towards this part of me. I was angry, I was cheated, every other thing, I was there. But I didn't tell anyone that, because my mother was gone and my father was working, and then he remarried and our family was mucked up and all that sort of stuff. So I had this hidden moment of pain. I didn't even know it was called shame. This is a big one. So my personality, passionate, larger than life, all that sort of stuff. But the main ingredient behind a bloke like me is aggression, overpowering. I was a bully at school because I verbalised blokes lesser than me because it actually made me feel good. I didn't even realise it. It sort of pushed me up a bit. But my aggression came out. The only safe place I could become really aggressive and get away with it was playing fullback. And I played up the top. I got to play well, and you know, the full forwards are always the pretty boys. Well, most of them wore my elbow. We had one umpire when I played. I belted the crapper out of them. I didn't understand why I was so angry when I played football. I played to kill. And we played for Sandgate, and we used to laugh when we belted blokes. But it was an escape from my aggression. I hated the job that I did. I did 22 years in a job that I didn't like. So I was deep, this anger and stuff wells up in me and goes crazy. And I don't know. I do my journey. And all through my life, you guys know I got this girl called Margaret who I love. I love her. She's just so, the first time I saw her, she's my drop dead gorgeous. And I can show you the photo of it today. I upgrade that photo on the front of my phone and I look at her and I feel so good about her. She was the best part of my life all the way through. You know, this is from 15 and a half and 16. And this underlying current of shame that's firing me up like you wouldn't believe. But I didn't know what to do with it, how, whatever. And it took me to get to 2.5 years ago when I get to finish and have the first book, and I'm thinking, oh, gee, this is pretty pretty amazing. People actually read that first book and they send me some emails and things like that. But then this is how God spoke to me. It's crazy. Phil Smith has become a treasured man to a lot of us. And I did about 4 years with him on ABC in the morning, that little Shed Happen show. He's got to retire now because he's pastoring a church without a building up the coast. And we went up to Mundubbera. This is in the book, so I'll try and be quick. And Phil did an interview on Friday morning with another bloke, Steve Austin. And Margaret heard him say that one of the books of influence in his life was this book called Bo's Cafe. And so Margaret told me about this book, and it was written by a few Christian blokes from America. And I just happened to say to Phil when we went up to Mundubbera, oh, Margaret really enjoyed your talk, and what's this Bo's Cafe business? And he went, oh, here's a copy of it. It's an audio book. He had it in his ute, and he said, yeah, take it home and listen to it. Well, I stuck it in, and I listened to that. And I listened to that audio book, and I got to a point where I was so convicted about this moment of shame and how you could actually do a reoccurring cycle in your life. And it was like, wow, God was showing me something. And one morning I went over to my truck yard early in my car, and Margaret went to church, and I was going to meet her at church. And I was at a moment there where I was going to keep driving up the coast because God was doing something to me on this shame. And so the journey began. And then Margaret found that there was a shame seminar that we both went to. And it was pretty drawn out and all the rest because, anyway, we blokes could have done the thing in half the time, but you've got to go through some true. But God's used that ministry to help me all the way through my life. It's called Elijah House. And a lovely couple came over some years ago, John and Paula Sanford, and I heard this big bloke, he was like a big Indian squaw, a big Indian chief, and he and his wife used to do this ministry. And it went on and on and on and on. But I used to sit there and listen to this bloke and think, man, this is the most real thing that's ever happened to me. Anyway, so in my shame. So then I was like, God stirred me up so much. He said, I want you to learn about this, because he said, this is what's stuffing us up. This is the cancer. This is like a cancer that creeps up on you and you don't even know you got it. And then you wonder why, and then you get forgiven and you go back to a point where your wife forgives you for being a rat, you know, mucking up or whatever, and then you go back to a moment and then you start again and you do your best. I'm going to do it. I'm going to beat it this time, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then you get to a point and the button goes green and your mouth are off, or you do something like that, or you bad foul mouth someone, or you belt another full forward in the head, and then away you go again. Now that's how it's played out with me. And you know, I've loved this woman so much. And, you know, we've had a pretty fantastic sex life. No ifs, buts, or maybes. And I'd be no different to you blokes. When I was 17 and first met her, my hands, physical touch is my love language, man, and I couldn't leave my hands off her. And luckily, we have no such thing as luck. God gave me a Fireman VW with a gear stick in the middle, and we'd go to the movies and all that sort of stuff. And I had my wife that just kept saying, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. She was a God rock. She was a rock woman, God, in my life. Anyway, so I never ever really got as close to her as I really thought. I always think there was something missing there. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But then how does it act out? A couple of years ago, I talked about this here. That's when it happened. But since then, God's never stopped making me put my head down and listen to men all around the country. And then he showed me the other thing. He showed me the other sort of personality, which was, we got a few blokes here that could describe that. Wayne is one. And I'll just describe the personality. And that's if you're a nice, quiet, gentle, sort of introvert type person. You can do the poor me, woe is me thing all your life. And we're really good at churches of taking the poor me, woe is me people and think we're going to solve the problem of them, until you get too close to that person and you get close to the point of saying, this is the moment, and then you can go and find another church who will start you off on the big cycle again, and you can stay in the comfort of pain, of shame, when you're poor me, woe is me, poor me, woe is me. And it's very hard to get away from where that point is. Very, very hard, because you've been there so long and you are there. Now, 1 John, this is the most important text for me. Pastor Jim Strelan's been a great encouragement to me in both my books. And when I talked about this, he talked to me about Colossians 14, 15, whatever it is. I've got it in the book. And I know what it means. But this 1 John 3, 19, 20, 21 goes like this to me. When you beat your own heart up, last night we had Chad here and there were a few blokes beating their own heart up still. Like, how many times do we beat our hearts trying to get it right? And then the next bit says, but God knows our heart. God knows everything about our heart, every single thing about our heart. But we don't get to that next part until we realize that he knows our heart and he's got control of it. While we're still belting ourselves up, feeling sorry for ourselves, or we're abusing people like I did and bullying them and trying to be smart, God and I can't even get near God because he's waiting for me to stop being God in this situation of shame. You hearing what I'm saying? There's not going to be one bloke here that's not some part of the journey. You might have been through the journey like me. Jesus died on the cross 100%, and that Colossians, I got it here. I better be like Morrow and a couple of those other champions. I didn't even bring any notes this time. And when I was down there before having a talk to God, I had this book here and I put a few little flags in the top of it. It's like this. Back in those days, when you'd win the battle, they'd capture the prisoners and they'd drag them through the streets and shame them, right? But what this means in the shame game is that Jesus didn't take us and drag us through the shame. He took the shame out of you and he got that dirty, rotten, mongrel, low-down, deceiving, conniving, life-taking shame and he took it and put it on the cross. He took it. He took 100%, but you've got to give him 100% of it. When you get to know the moment, the grace moment in the dirtiest part most of our lives of men, it'll be dirty, it'll be ugly, it'll be dirty grace, because grace will be there in the pits of the slime and the slush and the sludge of the sewer of life. But that's where he is. That's where grace. It's a free. We men can't get over that there is freedom. There is a free thing. It's called grace. We think we have to pay back all the time. So while we're bashing our brains in trying to fix ourselves, if we've got women at home, they can't get us because we're bashing ourselves trying to fix ourselves up because some dirty, rotten sexual sin that's plagued us in the past. Now, a lot of us, including me, I knew about God, I knew about Jesus, I sung all the songs, but did I know about the relationship, the one-on-one? Not until I probably got prostate. Notice I won't use the C word because that word doesn't belong to me. I don't use the shame word unless we're going to deal with it to get rid of it. Because men of Australia, you don't need to hear this ever again from me because there's so many men now I know that get it quick smart and then they go and they take it to another man and they say, shame no more. Isaiah 54:4, take away the shame of your youth, right? And men believe it. Dazzler's one man who believed it. 41 years of torture with alcohol. His mother lost him the day he picked up a glass. Daz didn't realize that. Daz's life of shame. But you know, because Daz met the creator of the universe on a first name basis, he didn't do an apprenticeship in a church. He met the creator. He didn't even get to know the middleman. And he heard that Jesus took his shame and guilt away and lifted his head. And when you walk into a place, when you walk into a room of men, let's be a little bit more, just be our place. And maybe ask God, is my brother got his head down? Am I going to run over and try and bash him? Am I going to run over and try and preach to him? What do you want me to do, Jesus? He said, I want you to love him. I want you to get with him. I want you to do the journey with him. It might take some time, because what it's taken 50, 67 years to find out about my shame, I may not be able to let it go in 5 minutes. Michael Hoffman, you represent a lot of people. Anyone here last year remember Michael coming up the front here? He broke his foot, his wooden foot, and Lars had to get a couple of straps of, out. He got the grinder out, and where's the speaker? Michael, the other one. Okay. Michael hid the pain of shame of his wooden leg. Now, most of you blokes here that don't know Michael, he can walk around here all day and you will not know that when he pulls his leg up...
The other one.
And because Michael trusts me with him, we were sitting up there having breakfast, just saying, how's it going, mate? Whatever, he's a driver trainer now. And we got talking and the shame moment came out. He and his dad, no one was wrong, but they didn't know how to deal with shame. So how many years was it that you and your dad never talked about you losing your leg?
40 years.
If you had known today what you know, what you didn't know, you and your dad could have had 40 years of more love and connection, couldn't you?
Yeah, I missed out on 40 years of having a father-son relationship, yeah.
Because Dad didn't know how to talk about being in the tractor when he got caught in the net and it ripped his leg off. And then how did he go with the girls? How did he go with relationships? The sports-crazed bloke, shame. Didn't know what it meant. You know, his whole life in relationship, battle in relationship. You know, this man didn't need to lose a first relationship with a woman, because this man has fought the battle of shame and he didn't even know it was a battle, did you?
No.
So this man represents every man who may have some sort of a wound. A wound. A one arm or something that doesn't look right when you look at yourself and you feel you're no good, you're useless, you're worthless. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, but your journey of healing is you taught me that it's easy to fall back into the place where you get a little bit of comfort and you have to constantly seek Jesus in your life to keep getting out of it, don't you?
Oh, exactly, yeah. Yeah, I've found that I've got a very defensive nature and I need to... I heard the word this morning, just step out but don't push yourself out, just ease yourself out. I've always wanted to, either hold myself back or jump in. Mm. And I've just learned from this morning that, not to be a bull at a gate. And the other thing I do is shut the gate. So I'm either one or the other. But I need to just ease myself into...
No more shame, though.
No.
Good man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, shame means I'm useless, I'm an idiot, I'm hopeless, I'm a failure, I'm not good enough. If you hear it enough, you can take it aboard and you can believe that lie. There's a difference between shame and guilt. If you're guilty and you've stuffed something up and you made a mistake, you're guilty. The quickest way to sort that guilt out is say, I'm sorry, I've stuffed it up, I'm guilty. What have I got to do to sort this out? And let's get on with life. Do not take aboard the guilt that will hold you in that prison of male shame. We have a press in our country that will not let any of our politicians, leaders in any field say sorry. And we've got a bunch of politicians who are too... They're not even game to let the creativity come out because they're dodging bullets all the time. They're not game to speak up. We've got one leader, he's either got a blue tie on if his team's in or there's a red tie, and we're all scared to talk because of the pain of shame that our press keep them to. Men, everywhere you go, turn off that stuff off the TV. because that's not building us up. If we had more encouragement to the leaders in different fields, our churches and everywhere, there'd be less shame that we put our people in shame to. So guilt and shame, there's no... But if you stay in guilt long enough, or you stay in sadness long enough, you can go on to the next one. I'm telling you something that was told to me by Nathan Mueller, our Christian psychiatrist. You can be sad, and then you can go into... sadness can go get you into depression and get you into shame and all those things. Things that I didn't have a clue about. But my job is to pass them on now, because freedom is freedom. The spiritual healing is the only way out of this. I can tell you. Anyone thinking about that dress? Anyone got their eye on my dress? No, I'm definitely not 12 up the top. Now, I'll just give you a couple of little things. It's worth you having a little think about the way your family was when you were growing up. There's definitely some indicators there that worth having a look at. You could have felt neglected. I talked to Timmy about this. Timmy's mum and dad served in the church in New Guinea for a long time. Timmy used to only see his mum and dad at the end of the year. Good and faithful servants of God. And it got to a point where Timmy's mother said, I can't take it any longer. I need to be with my family. And I said to Tim, you know, did you ever feel at any time, God, you know, you got my mother and father up there, you know, get stuffed church, get stuffed everything. I want my mother and father. Timmy could have felt some part of neglect and things like that. And he wouldn't be wrong feeling that way. He didn't feel that way, but he helped me talk about this. So, or if your parents are so busy and they put you into boarding school, just like they're too busy in their business, you could be in a family like run by like an army barracks, where you are yes man, no man, yes sir, no sir, click your heels. What's the use of me saying anything anyway? My mother or my father, or both of them, they answer every question that somebody asks me. So I just go into lockdown and shutdown. And if you've got a personality where you use going quiet, you can use that as a defense, which is then pretty awful when you see a child not responding to their parents as their little defense, or then you see a child arguing with their mother and father, things like that. There's telltale signs. You could be in that family that's like a bowl of fruit salad. A bloke lived across the road from me in a unit, and he couldn't get his name, surname changed quick enough, because in the area that he grew up in, his name was not nice in the area. He was in a totally enmeshed, he was part of this family, and he wanted to take his name out of there because it was too collected. You can be in an abusive family. Now have a think about the abuse. It can be just another male. There's a lot of boys and girls that are in homes that they don't even have their fathers or their mothers. And when you know that one in three females get abused sexually and one in seven, that's pretty chronic. You don't have to be a rocket science to know where most of our problems come from. Without fathers, and then with sexual interference, and then shame. A lot of our shame for men has come from the past sexually, because we haven't had a relationship with the King. Now, Daz and I are pretty good mates. John and I are pretty good mates, you know, Jeff and whatever. The last thing I want to do is offend these blokes that they invest into my life. And my relationships are important with Tim and all these blokes and Tim. You know, but my relationship with God wasn't personal. I didn't know about that thing where talk to him like the boys have shown you today. But when you get to know, he'll teach you how to trust him. He'll teach you. You just have to ask him. Say, Lord, please teach me to trust you. I don't know about this trust in the world I live in. And that's pretty normal for a bloke. So let's get onto the way of your relationship with God. If you're going a little bit further, I'll just bash these other things out for as you roll on in your life. You might get into the point of you failed in business. You might be failed in your ministry. When you were growing up, you might have been part of a rape. You might have been part of an abortion. You might have been made take an early redundancy, and then you've got to pretend to the world that you've got it all together and retirement's fantastic. You might have a big hit in your health. There's many things that we men here can take aboard. One of our dear brothers here showed last night that, you know, he's got 8 children, and because he and his wife lost a child, some people actually said, well, that's a blessing because you've got 8 kids. How does he feel? How does his wife feel? They're actually ashamed. That's been put shame on them to walk around thinking, you know, there's something wrong with us because we have 8 children. It doesn't. They can be little things, little tiny things. Morrow's not here. I hope the Eagles are winning. But Morrow's in the book. And Morrow, he didn't say in the tractor thing, when he was 12 years of age, he was the only kid on his farm that couldn't drive a tractor. And even the girls could drive a tractor in the neighbouring farms. And you can see what Morrow thinks of his dad, but his dad never said to him, why don't drive the tractor? So Morrow took it aboard that he wasn't good enough. And Morrow only found that out a year ago when I was over in Perth and we were driving down the highway listening to a boy named Sue, the Shame Song. And Morrow said, God showed me that when I was 12, I didn't think I was good enough because I was the only kid not allowed to drive the tractor. And then he was 17, and then he was an apprentice diesel fitter, and he was standing there beside his boss, and this bloke, this big farmer, was having a difference of opinion with Morrow's boss, and Morrow's a shy bloke when he grew up, and this bloke was sticking it right up Morrow's boss, and Morrow was standing there beside, and this bloke said, what are you doing standing there doing nothing, listen to us, get that broom and get over there, I'm not paying you to stand here and listen to us. And Morrow actually went into a smashed thing, I'm not good enough, I'm a failure again. Morrow sung in front of 350,000 people over at the Angus Buchan thing. He goes on the radio every morning. He goes up there with the Eagles every day. And it was it last year we were over there together. And he said, I've never felt that I've been good enough. He believed a lie. He believed a lie. And the deceiver has held Morrow back. And that's why I wanted to make a bit of a thing of PJ. The blokes with this talent that are a bit unique, they're sitting ducks for the dirty, rotten deceiver to go up and say, PJ, you're not good enough, son. You know, you're a failure. Rubbish. Rubbish. And we men have to take authority over the deceiver of the world. Paul McLaughlin there, I said in his first session, the watermelon grower. It was absolutely amazing. He's a man who had a property down there at Condobo was worth $13 million. You build it up every year, put another million into it. The big successful businessman. Have a listen to what God's done for that man now. And did he know what shame is? Yes, he did. He couldn't walk down the street, he felt so bad. He couldn't pay those men. All those things that he put his hat on that he thought he was identified by. Instead of knowing it was Paul, just Paul, champion, son of the king. He's not defeated by any means. He knows he's overcome what shame means. So all those things in your business life, have a think of them. All right, what's the time? Is it? Oh, you didn't throw it at me. Okay. When we come back, I want to quickly, I want to have a quick talk to you blokes about the end result is this. This isn't a shame talk because God gave me a call a couple of years ago. He said, don't stop talking heart to the men of Australia till every man in Australia is open and free in his heart. And he knows what rocks are and he knows how to get rid of those rocks just to give me the rocks and I'll give him a new heart. There's a lot of men here today with new hearts. And you don't even have to say, I've got a new heart, because we know who's got the new hearts because it's surrender. And then in this last 2 years that God said, I want you to tell the men to go deeper into their soul of who they are. And he said, I want you to tell them that this shame only can be cured at the cross with Jesus. The world's way of shame can take you so far and it's a band-aid. But if you want to get the full healing, you're healing here today. And when we have communion tonight, and when you do your normal thing, don't leave this place if God shows you a moment in your life of shame so that you can be here and the boys can pray with you to all night, whatever. But you don't go home with this. You learn the defense of what God wants for us and what Jesus died for us. But there's more. And then he said to me, he had me talk to these blokes about husbands love your wives the other night, Ephesians 5:25. And I want to have another 10 minutes with you blokes as soon as you get your tea and come back, Because all this stuff means one thing. I want to love my wife. Johnny would love to love a woman. This man wants to love his wife. You want to love your wife. You don't want to have lustful looks up the road. You don't want to have porn problems. You want to love your wife. You want to see her as the most glorious wife. That's what God gave us in marriage. And what's the use of doing all these programs and stuff if we don't take the tools and we take them and take 100% and give 100% of what Jesus died for us? And that's what changes the nation, because love. My wife blessed me to come here today. And Chad's wife blessed. You know, I want to be home with her. Do I really want to get on the bus for the next 20 hours and be absolutely stuffed? And then on Tuesday night, we got one of our shed men having his 70th birthday. And I put my hand up to his wife and said, yeah, we'll have another little party down at the shed there, because he prays with all the boys every Wednesday morning at 6 o'clock. And he wants to be in the blokes he cooks the barbecue with. I don't give a stuff about those things in the big picture of life, because God's given me breath. And only he, when he's finished with me and he wants to take me home, then I'm going and I'm not stopping. But the most important thing he's given me is the love of my wife and my wife's love to me. And I want to give you blokes a few home truths so you can go home with a few more tools. And your wife, you won't have to open your mouth. Your wife's going to be drawn into your heart, because she's at home praying for you right now, like mine is. And she wants you. She, a lot of you blokes and me, for most of my life, she never had me. I thought I had her in my head, but I didn't. I couldn't get there because I had too much slag and slurry and stuff in the stuff of my life before I met the Creator on a first name basis. No way do I want to offend him in any shape or form. I would cry. It'd be the worst thing. If I offend any of you blokes here tonight and put you off the track with knowing Jesus, then I'm an absolute dud. And man, I want to tell you, your beautiful Princess Megan, she was out there. She was out there. And in the company of four or five blokes, put your hands up if you were there when I said to Megan, your man was magnificent here before, leading us in worship. And I said, thank you very much for loving Nathan like a good and godly woman. Don't push him away. Love him. And she had the opportunity of receiving some affirmation about you. And if we're going to say something good about someone, say it so everyone can hear. Because you can hear it in your heart, can't you? You know I'm not trying to fluffy duck you up. All right? And if we've got something to criticize someone about, go and see them one-on-one. Stop the criticism. If you're going to hear someone criticize someone else, say, Simon, you got a problem with Mark? Come with me, mate, and let's sort it out with him right now. Don't tell me, tell him. Let's have a cup of tea. God bless.